Good morning, everybody. It's Sunday morning here in London, and this is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space live, as we have been for the last 77 weeks. This is week 78 of turning towards life. I'm feeling, as I always am, really delighted to be here, filled with the joys of having launched all kinds of things this week, like a podcast, which is spreading its way across the world. So maybe some of you are listening to us that way. And Lizzie, so pleased to see you and really thrilled with this source that you've written, which we're going to dive into together. So welcome, everyone.
Yeah, a really big welcome. And if you're listening on the podcast, it's super exciting. So thank you for doing what you can to have your notifications on or whatever the thing is. I haven't really mastered the podcast thing, but I know that when I find things on my iTunes, they always pop up and I'm really curious as to how we're popping up. So if anybody has any feedback on that, it'll be very, very lovely as well. So this source for today comes from me reflecting and being in a process of feeling really wounded. And I was just saying to Justin before we got on the call, you know, I was kind of hesitating on bringing this because in some ways it feels very unresolved and undefinitive. But I think that might be also the nature of what it is to be wounded sometimes, that often it doesn't come to some neat closure or some neat package of, well, this is sorted out now or something. And a lot of us live with massive complexity in our lives because of the nature of human relationships and family and systems that we are in. And so anyway, I'm bringing it, and it feels like a very compelling, real topic that I think most people have experienced in their lives. So anyway, maybe we should begin. Justin, you happy if I read first and then?
Yes, but I'd love to say something first.
Yeah.
I want to correct myself that we're on week 79.
Oh.
I don't know why I think that's important, but somehow it is. But I just really want to echo something, what it is, such a treat when you write something for this and it comes out live and real and not all polished and tidied up around the edges. And I'm so with you that I seems so clear to me, if anything can seem clear in this way, that life is always like this, that we're always unfinished and in the midst of trying to work something out, and never more so in our relationships with other people.
Yeah.
So it seems exactly right that we should take up something that might feel unfinished to you and see what the next turn of it becomes, because we speak about it.
Yeah.
And then with all the so many people listening and joining us in this, it will take on another turn in everyone's lives as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's go for it.
Okay. And Justin, as usual, it's quite long, so if there's a place where you think you want to read from that feels best, let's do that.
Sure.
So this is called Deeper and More Subtle Realms, written by me in the midst of my life. I don't know a wound that doesn't somehow involve other people. By a wound, I mean a hurt, a raw emotional feeling that also has a physical pain to it. I often experience my wounds in my chest, just between where my ribs meet. I know others have difficult physical sensations. Where do you feel it when your feelings are hurt? The thing is, because the wounds involve others, often communicating about them to the people involved is part of healing and reconnecting. But that's so hard to do when you're hurt, because what often arises in the conversation is the wound itself. The primitive, sometimes rageful, sometimes ashamed, sometimes withdrawn, sometimes angry part of us shows itself right in the middle of the relationship that needs help, right in the middle of where healing is needed. There is the wound. So how on earth do we shift this? We love someone, which is why they had the power to hurt us. Or at the very least, we're connected to them by some shared system, a family, a company, school, community, etc. And that someone is the person we need or want to speak to find forgiveness or a way through to something more peaceful and aligned with how we want to feel. There have been many times when the path of being and staying wounded and unforgiving has been presented to me. It often feels like the only righteous path, the only one that's justified and the only one that doesn't let anyone off the hook. That often feels like a bold and just cause. It's the path that holds everyone to account, that seeks to change things and make things better. Many times the path is about things coming round to my way, the way I think things should be. But at the heart of things, beneath the story, there is also another realm of relationship at play. A more elusive realm of forgiveness and acceptance, compassion, and a very grown-up feeling of being beyond the right and wrong of life. Access to this space is granted by empathy and allowing. This realm is about being more and more able to stand in other people's shoes and strengthening ourselves so we don't feel we have to change others in order to love them. Our own personal deepening is required to see beyond and beneath our stories, to our own hurt and pain. And only then can we see and feel the possibility beyond punishment and retribution, revenge and fractured relationships. This is all really hard. The path of the wound is so very easy to slide down and maintain. The path of beyond and beneath is something that takes work and courage and relationship with wise and deep fellow souls who can hold us to our true nature better than we can in those moments. I write this from a commitment to truly forgive. And also in the knowledge that I hold grievances that I'm deepening into and which require ongoing work. I'm writing this as a statement of my wish to hold a deeper truth in life than my version of events, whilst also carefully and delicately holding my version of events as very important too. Let this be the conversation about what forgiveness might mean for each of us. Not as a spiritual bypass where we pretend everything is fine and carry on, but as a day-to-day, moment-to-moment inquiry into the deeper, more subtle realms of the heart that allow people and things to be just the way they are without trying to fix or change them, and still remain in some kind of relationship with them that's dignified and respectful of our own and others' humanity.
Our own personal deepening is required to see beyond and beneath our stories to our own hurt and pain. And only then can we see and feel the possibility beyond punishment and retribution, revenge and fractured relationships. This is all really hard. The path of the wound is so very easy to slide down and maintain. The path of beyond and beneath is something that takes work and courage and relationship with wise and deep fellow souls who can hold us to our true nature better than we can in those moments. I write this from a commitment to truly forgive, and also in the knowledge that I hold grievances that I am deepening into and which require ongoing work. I'm writing this as a statement of my wish to hold a deeper truth in life than my version of events, while also carefully and delicately holding my version of events as very important too. Let this be the conversation about what forgiveness might mean for each of us, not as a spiritual bypass where we pretend everything is fine and carry on, but as a day-to-day, moment-to-moment inquiry into the deeper, more subtle realms of the heart that allow people and things to be just the way they are without trying to fix or change them, and still remain in some kind of relationship with them that's dignified and respectful of our own and others' humanity.
It's quite something reading this back. And the bit that I'm currently really appreciating is this part that I find really crucial, which is not doing one thing or the other, but holding both things. So not throwing our story away about what it's been like for us. And not also throwing away the possibility that something other than my story is possible too, but holding both of those things. So not pushing it away and pretending, but also not letting go of the fact that there is something deeper than what my perception might be right now, and holding those things really delicately so that I don't feel pushed away in my experience, but I'm not just stopping there, that there's more. And I think that's the point of this, is that it's not an either or situation. It's a welcoming more than what I can currently perceive and what I currently understand. And I think we've spoken about this lots of times, you know, opening ourselves in all directions more and more so that we can hold a deeper view or a wider view or something that just kind of ekes the door open to a greater reality, to a greater sense of what's going on, rather than just my own version of what's going on.
We've often talked about this. We keep on stumbling on that. Our shared project is called Third Space, and very often what we stumble on is that there's so often a third something that calls on us when we want to resolve, when we're deep in the thicket and stuck in our own pain or self-righteousness or something like that. That third is something like, exactly as you say, is not giving up on everything that I can see and feel and trying to resolve a situation by self-abandonment. And not requiring that someone else abandons themselves in order to meet us, but something else. And it's not, I think one of the things that's striking me from what you're saying is it's not often some kind of middle way, like the sort of simplistic approach would be, well, let's take into account a little bit of what your experience and a little bit of my experience and see if we can find the thing that somehow meets in between. And that's, trying to do that often gets us stuck as well, because it ends up being disrespectful and of both of us, and doesn't really allow either of us to change or to deepen. And so the third thing is, like you're saying, is some way of holding, it's a polarity of holding both ends, and yet at the same time not being committed to a particular kind of singular kind of truth in the situation. Like you say in this beautiful piece of writing, it's really hard. Yeah. Because it's so tempting, and I suppose until we start to really see and feel this move that we have to make, where we move from, oh, I know it feels like the whole world is centered around me, and therefore my position is either completely right or completely wrong, until we can start to let go of ourselves being at the center of things all the time, it's very, very hard to let go enough to make this possible. And one of the things that I've been wondering about as you were talking was, there's always another layer to this. So there's a trap. That's, I know I get into this all the time. So the trap goes something like this. Well, I can see that I'm not completely right and that you're not completely right. And therefore I demand that you too give up the certainty of your position and join me in this space where we're holding polarities. And if you don't join me in that space, then I'm right and you're wrong. And I'm the one who's all developed. And there's this very subtle way in which we can keep on making demands of ourselves and the other, mm-hmm. right in the midst of this, even when we start to see a path through, that the other person has to join us on this path. And that seems to me locks us back into the difficulty again.
Yeah. Yeah, I very much have that going on as well. And it's like, you know, I said about, you know, it's easy to slide down the path of the wound. Sometimes it feels like a tumbling. Like, it's not like I have any choice as to whether I basically fall down the stairs, like directly into the thing. And there's also a kind of self-gratification about it as well. Like, being right is quite luxurious or something. Like, I can feel myself luxuriating in the righteousness of things because what I think is obviously the thing to think. It's so understandable And it also, I can feel the ease with which I could hold on to that position forever. And if I didn't have some other sense of these realms of not that level of interaction with the world, which come from meditation and conversation and relationship with people who aren't in my situation and who are wise and all those things that I have in my life, if I didn't have that, I don't know how I wouldn't think that that was just the only truth. You know, I find the times when I'm feeling wounded, the most glaringly obvious times of just how important community and relationship and conscious understanding of humanness is, because it's completely alluring. It's like to be right and to be, to stand in my position and have an opinion that's very strong of something and how things should be in the world. It feels like I'm on the right track, like I'm doing something good, and I can feel this kind of crusader-like attitude comes forth of, well, if I don't hold this person to truth, who else is going to? And then what's going to happen? And, you know, I find myself in this very justifying position. And ultimately, the majority of that interaction is happening when I'm on my own. They're not there. It's in my head. And so I'm the one suffering. I'm the one living out this thing. And they also, whoever's involved, might also be suffering, but not in the way that I am. And it feels, but it also feels really important to know what this feels like to be on the wounded end, so that if I'm ever the one wounding, I know what it's like to be on the other end, if that makes sense. So it does serve me for other things that happen when I'm the wounder, when I might have made a mistake and not realized, or maybe sometimes intentionally done something because I was angry, whatever the thing is. It's an education to feel wounded, because it allows me to then resolve things when I can resolve things, and do things that I can do when I'm in a dynamic where there is open and where there is for real comment about these things. But the majority of time, it's much worse when there isn't the opportunity for healing, and how do we move beyond those ones where you just know that the person involved is not going to move. So we have to do our inner work, because they're not going to do theirs. Like, it's just not possible for whatever reason, because of a generational thing or because of a particular kind of way of being in the world. And so if we can't work with ourselves, it's just going to be perpetuating all the time. And we're the one who, as the wounded one, carries on suffering when we're the one creating it from this position of righteousness and holding on to our story about things. So it's a really delicate thing. And I think we all deserve to be heard and seen in our version of events, but there to be a big fat and simultaneously that we learn about and we keep learning about. And it's a process, an unfolding lifelong process of attuning to something deeper about who we are that can support us and provide a way more robust platform of being human than being right provides. Like, being right is like a really strong but brittle and laden with deeper emotions place that you could topple any moment. But the kind of deeper realms I'm trying to talk about are far wider. There's, you know, you can run around in it. There's space to be free in it, instead of having to stay on like a 5p piece worth of space to maintain your position.
I really love what you said towards the end of this piece, that it's so important as we give up on our certainty that we're right, not to give up on, and there are things that are true and real about what I can see and what I can feel. Because I think that there's, for many of us, there's a self There's something very delicious in a very painful way, both about being really right and about being really wrong. Because we can play a sort of grandiose position in either, you know, either I'm really right and I can feel my own power and I can exclude you, or I'm really wrong and I'm filled with shame. And for some of us, the being filled with shame place is as much of a draw as the being filled with power place. So we sort of bounce between the two very, very easily. And we also easily demand that someone else bounce between the two. So I want you, you know, in response to my feeling powerful, I want you to give up all of your rightness and just admit how terrible you are, and then we'll be okay. The cost of my self-aggrandizement is your diminishment. So it can't be about those. And as you were talking about all of those situations where actually we can't demand something of someone else, which I think is basically always the case. You know, and you said it the way in, which is right, you know, which has so much in it, that sometimes the other person is really fixed, and sometimes it's a generational thing, and sometimes it's so we have a different culture to one another, and sometimes it's all kinds of things. But it's striking me even now that there's a way in which, even when we get into that kind of account of it, we're once again in the territory of demanding that the other person be different to the way that they are. So now I can see that you're fixed and I'm not. So I have to work on myself because you're the fixed one. You're the you know, a fixed as in mean as in unmoving. So yes, I agree with you that the place we have to start is with ourselves, and we have to start in a way that doesn't have us give up on ourselves or on the other person. And we have to be prepared to do that even if nothing changes in between us over a really, really long period of time. And I think that you nail this very early on, actually right at the beginning of this piece, where what you're suggesting is that the first step is that we have to be able to say, I'm wounded. But that's often the part that we don't know. The part that keeps us in whatever cycle we're in is our refusal to look at ourselves and say, there is a really soft, tender spot here, and whatever's happened, that part is really, really hurting, and I am really hurting, and I'm tender and I'm raw, and I want to do my very, 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 very best not to look weak or incomplete or too big or any of those kind of things. So I'll ignore that and divert all of it into some other strategy to get my way. And sometimes, no, I think always, maybe that's too strong. Yeah, I think it's always. Always, that's the first step with ourselves. And sometimes it's also really helpful in our relationship with another, is to say, you know, the beyond place is not, let me tell you all my grievances and all the things I think are true, and let me hear all of your grievances and all the things you think are true, and we'll work it out. The beyond place is actually to start by saying, this really hurts. The thing that's most present is, I'm really hurting. And that is often, no matter what happens from it, the path to our common humanity, because to be human is to hurt so often and so much, to feel wounded.
I love that you said that. I feel like it's such a different thing to say I'm wounded than to be in the story of it, in a way. Like the wound is of the realm that's more subtle. And to speak of that already changes the dynamic of who's right and who's wrong. Just, I'm hurt. And I hadn't quite kind of clocked onto that, but the woundedness and the awareness of the fact that one is wounded is a kind of prerequisite to forgiveness. And I think that's what I've seen so much that I don't really enjoy, which is thinking our way to forgiveness. As in, I don't know. It always feels like, I mean, I've never been able to do it. I think that's the thing. I've never been able to just meditate and then I've forgiven someone for something big. Like it's never worked with me. It doesn't seem, what feels truer is that it's an ongoing process. That maybe one day there's some line that you cross where someone is forgiven. But it feels more to me like a process. Like it's to not be thinking that there's a line, but to be thinking it's always going to be a process is more of a helpful relationship to it rather than, oh, one day I will be free of this. It just feels a little bit artificial and like it's, you're working to an end point that may or may not come rather than accepting that this might just be an ongoing thing in life. And with that acceptance, I think comes a grief too. You know, letting go of everything being all right is a really big thing. So I've been realizing recently around this word acceptance, like sometimes I think it has these connotations of peace and which it does in some ways, but I think it also, to accept things, you have to let go of things too. And in the letting go of what your hopes were, there is grief. And there's a kind of, I don't know, I experience this process of forgiveness and acceptance as a letting go of the story I had about what I think things should be like. And associated with that is a grief for what my mind had painted as what should be happening or how our relationship should be. So I feel acquainted with that, you know, acquainted with the grief of letting something go, of letting a relationship be different than how I wish it would be. And in that letting go, some of my story can then loosen around what I think it should be, but it doesn't feel like a hard line, like, oh, I've done that now, but now look. It feels much more ongoing and much more wriggling into and find my way rather than completing a project of some kind and ticking it off the to-do list or something. It's not of that order.
I'm so glad you're talking about it this way. It's magic because it starts to cut through something that I think is it's a very seductive trap that any of us can get into, and it's also a very seductive trap that we get sold to around all the time, which is there is magical release from your difficulties, and it comes as a result of you can do some kind of magic process if you say, you know, a forgiveness prayer three times, or you know worship at the altar of I forgive you, or you go through some kind of cognitive process, or you somehow will magically be freed, reprogrammed almost. I was thinking when you talk about it being a hard line, what it does is it treats us and our relationships as objects, not as living processes. And to be in a living process is to keep on, and to be a living something, and for our relationships to be living is to keep on coming round and coming round and coming round, and they are growing and changing, not always growing, but they are changing over time because of our participation in them, rather than being a fixed thing, which I swap from one thing to another. So there's all of that. What a freedom it is to start to see ourselves as an ongoing process. And then the second part of it that I really appreciated that I think is so important is any way of working with this and any way of working with ourselves as human beings that requires us to live in a fantasy of everything will be all right in some straightforward way. My life will be without complications. If I do the right invocation or something, I will never have trouble with you or with myself or in life again. Also keeps the difficulty going. It's part of how we demand impossible things of ourselves and one another. So it's such a potent and beautiful and tender invitation to say, as you're saying, our part of our work, as you said in what you wrote, is to stay true to what feels really true about what this is like for us and what we can see. And part of our work is to be open to hearing that from the other and really allowing ourselves into it. And then this wonderful new part that you're adding in, Lizzie, which is part of it, is giving up on demanding that our relationship with another person be a very, very particular way that suits us. Because our relationships with other people aren't in our control anyway. They always arise between us, and they arise from things that are very mysterious, our histories, our shared histories, and our cultural history, and what happens with our bodies, and all of those kind of things. So I'm very taken by the act of, I think I'm just saying back to you what you've said in my own way, that acceptance is not feeling fine about it. It's not accepting only the parts that I want to accept. It's more like learning to live truthfully in the state of things as they are, and to keep on being present and available and as kind as we can and as true as we can, and not demanding that life go our way. And that always involves grief, because we have to let go of a story that we've had. And strangely enough, sometimes when we let go of the stories that we've had, that's exactly the point at which something new can start to emerge, because we loosen our own part in keeping the whole thing rigid.
Yeah.
And maybe nothing will change. Mm-hmm. That's also true.
Yeah. This is really gorgeous conversation, Justin. I feel like we could go on forever. And I mean, maybe there are some other sources on this mind in the future. But for now, I think we have to end this broadcast / podcast, but cast of things. And thank you, everybody, just for being in the unknown with us and for being witness to these conversations. It's a very brilliant thing that we're doing, I think, and we're very glad to be here. And I wanted just to say one more thing, which is tomorrow night, I've completely forgotten to mention it to people, really. But if you're watching this on Sunday, the 7th of April, 2019, on the 8th of April, 2019, which is tomorrow night, Monday night in Hammersmith, we are gathering for Turning Towards Love. And it is a small gathering in Hammersmith, normally between 6 and 9 people sharing and being together over a reading, a source, just like we do here, really, and checking in with one another. So if you feel called to come, we'll be at Recenter in Hammersmith. You can find the details on our website, which, by the way, is wearethirdspace.org, and it's very beautiful, and you should have a look when you finish listening, because we've just relaunched it and it's very lovely. And I don't know if I'm allowed to say that yet, but I've just said it.
It's public, it's out in the world. We are.
It's very exciting. So anyway, those are little reminders for the end. Thank you so much, everybody, and we'll see you next week on Turning Towards Life once again.
Thank you, Lizzie. I want to add just one reminder, which is you can always find our sources that we've read, including this piece by Lizzie, on the special Turning Towards Life microsite, which is turningtowards.life. And we will so look forward to being with you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.